Maybe you have one of those jobs that gets in the way of your social life. Your friends want to know if you can join them next week, and all you can tell them is, I don't know until the boss posts the schedule. More than a social life can be affected by not knowing when and how long you'll work. And as of earlier this month, Oregon is the first state with a law on the books directing some businesses to give workers advance notice of scheduling something more than I need you to work tomorrow. Fair Work Week was the goal of several organizations, including Working Families, which has offices in 11 states and the District of Columbia. Hannah Tauba is the Oregon office manager for Working Families and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. Would you lay out the issues for us? What did you want to address in the law?
Absolutely. Well, what we were seeing is a rise on this in this just-in-time scheduling practices, especially in food service, hospitality, and retail. So you're seeing a lot of workers who are getting their schedules at the very last minute. We actually, to get a better sense of the problem here in Oregon, participated in a study. We did in-depth interviews with over 700 workers and found that many of them are finding out with less than 24 hours notice whether they need to work the next day. And as you were saying, that can have huge impacts. If you have children you need to take care of, you need to set up their child care in advance. Say you're a student trying to pursue an education on the side of your work. If you don't know if you're going to have to miss class because you might be scheduled, that makes it nearly impossible. We also, unfortunately, have a lot of people working in these jobs. They tend to be low-wage jobs, and they're balancing two jobs just to make ends meet. And then when they're not knowing their schedules until the very last minute, how can they maintain their shifts at the second job? So it really is a serious issue around planning your finances and taking care of your family.
And I see that on-call scheduling was a particular issue. What is that?
Yes. Yeah, so that's asking a worker to keep their whole day open in case you might want them to come into work. I'm sure you can imagine the problems with that, especially if you're not getting any pay for that day, you're asked to keep it open. You know, if you have children, as I said, you have to arrange for childcare on that off chance you get called in. If you have another job, you have to tell that job, I'm sorry, I can't work Tuesday because I might work my other job. And then you just sit at home waiting for a call.
So you've essentially dedicated the time to the job, but the job hasn't dedicated any confirmed time or, for that matter,
Absolutely.
Any money to you.
Absolutely.
This seems to be passing Fair Work Week legislation in a number of cities at the same time.
Yes.
Was the legislation developed by one organization, maybe yours, and then spread across the country?
So there's been a coalition working nationally, and Working Families has been involved. There's also the Center for Popular Democracy, and a number of other really wonderful organizations have been fighting for this. And what we've seen is city ordinances have passed already in Seattle, San Francisco, San Jose, Emeryville, California, and now in New York, and I may be missing one because this tide is moving. But we're the first state here in Oregon to pass a statewide law that's going to affect workers all across the state, not just in one major urban area.
So who carried water for it in the legislature? How did it gain such traction so quickly?
Well, you know, we started out with a work group in the legislature, and we had Michael Dembrough started out as our chair there, although he actually moved to be talking about environmental policy this legislative session. So we had quite a few wonderful champions in both the House and the Senate here in Oregon. We also had a number of community organizations and unions that were in the Capitol every day this legislative session talking to legislators. We had a wonderful group of workers who were involved from the very beginning talking about their experiences and helping to mold a bill that will really affect them. I think sometimes you see a bill created by really well-meaning legislators that just have never been in that experience before. So we really wanted this bill to be guided by workers, to be guided by true experiences, and not to fix a problem that's not there. So that's why we started with this study. We started with putting together a work group, including many workers who have been in these jobs. And we really let a lot of people play a role in building something that would really work well on all sides.
What we're talking about here is the Oregon Fair Work Week law, which got the governor's signature earlier in August and will go into effect down the road. We'll explain that in a moment. Passed the Senate and House handily. Hannah Tauba is the Oregon office manager for Working Families. You can join our conversation on the Exchange about work weeks and maybe share some experiences of your own about what it's been like to hold your life in limbo while you're waiting to find out what your work schedule is. We'd like to hear those stories. 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. On the other side, if you're an employer, what are the issues that have made it difficult for you to figure out when you can actually have people scheduled to work? We'd like to hear that as well. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Had Fair Work Week come up in previous legislative sessions, Hannah?
You know, we had done some work about it in the past, but this was the first session that it really gained the traction that it needed to pass. So we've been talking about it for a while, and the fact that it passed in Seattle, I think, was really a huge help. In fact, our bill here is very similar to the bill that passed in Seattle. So we were able to say, like, look, Seattle has already passed this. There's been some research done. It really has been successful. There hasn't been a lot of bad outcomes, and we've seen workers' lives really improve. So we want to do that here.
Have the issues that you mentioned, things like the just-in-time scheduling, have those become more pronounced over the years, or was it just a sense of people getting tired of dealing with it over and over again?
They have definitely become more pronounced. They're not brand new. It's not that they were never there before, but retail and food service are the most rapidly growing fields in Oregon. So these industries where we see more of this, they're getting bigger, and there's more and more people working in those jobs. Additionally, the biggest chains, mostly in fast food and big retail, are using softwares to schedule their employees, which it makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons, but of course a computer is not very good at assessing the needs of a human. And so what we're seeing is, you know, this human touch being taken out of scheduling. And in smaller businesses, you see a little bit less of this. We've talked to a lot of small business owners and employees who said, you know, my coworkers are like family, and my employees, I want to make sure that they're lives are something that they can manage, that they know how much they're going to make at the end of the month. They might see that more human element. That's not to say that all of them do, but we saw more of that in the smaller businesses. The bigger businesses, there's just this, you know, lack of human touch, like I said. So the workers are undervalued and sometimes being scheduled by a computer algorithm that might not understand why it's a problem to send someone home at midnight and ask them to come back at 5 a.m. the next day.
Ah, that is one issue dealt with in the law. So let's get into some of the specifics here then, Hannah,
sure.
Because there are limits to this law. So first of all, yep. Which industries and which employers are regulated by it?
So this law in particular looks at the largest food service, hospitality, and retail businesses in the state. So we're looking at big chains. Employers have 500 or more employees worldwide. So, you know, most of your fast food and retail chains that you see at the mall are included in this. And there's really a lot of workers in those fields here in the state.
All right, so but how do you define 500 workers worldwide, particularly if you're dealing with a franchise situation? If you're a franchisee of a chain that has 3,000 stores, but the franchisee here locally only has 250 employees, does that make them exempt?
Right, so this was definitely an issue that we needed to suss out while working on the law, and it came up pretty early on. And what we ended up going with as our way to assess franchises is looking at franchises by owner. And we used the term in the bill, integrated enterprise. And so what this means is that if we have one owner who owns, say, six coffee shops and two grocery stores and, you know, a number of different businesses, instead of looking at the name of the business, where often the LLC for each location is different, so it's hard to know how many employees there are, we're instead looking at the owner and any owners that are connected as well. So, you know, if I owned a business, and then also my husband did, our employees would be counted together. And then you look at the total number of employees under that owner, so that you're not looking at the, you know, there are franchises where they might have six employees and it's one owner for one franchise. This bill doesn't affect those franchises directly. It really affects the chains that have this larger structure. They have more employees. And, you know, it's just a way to keep in control this issue that has been such a problem for workers without penalizing small businesses and small business owners.
All right, so 500 or and up is the number?
Yes.
All right,
yes.
But then you
worldwide
could,
too.
Okay, worldwide.
So not just in Oregon.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Interesting. So you could have potentially you know, a Burgerzilla franchise or two different stores owned by different franchisees, and one would be exempt from the law and one would not.
Yes. Yeah. But this is actually the same. This number came from the Seattle bill. Mm-hmm. So it's the same as they've been doing it there. And I think that what they've found is that that 500 number is more businesses than you'd expect.
Okay. So the Fair Work Week Law is our discussion topic here on the Jefferson Exchange with Hannah Talba from Working Families. She's the Oregon office manager. 500 workers or more worldwide. And then how far in advance do schedules need to be posted?
So it's going to start out in a year from now with a 7-day notice period of schedules. And that's going to roll out after 1 year to 14 days, which is ultimately what the law provides. We do a slower rollout. That's to help businesses adapt and change their practices. But ultimately, employees will have 2 weeks' notice of their schedules, allowing them to schedule doctor's appointments, set up child care, it corresponds to shifts for their other job, or manage their education class commitments.
And you mentioned the situation where you can be scheduled until midnight and then told to come back at 6 in the morning. Is that addressed in the law?
It is. So we call that clopening. Closing and opening. And it's a pretty terrible problem. You know, we had workers come testify. Those were some of the most moving stories for me because we had a number of workers testify on this issue whose schedules with clopening made them majorly ill. We had one woman who was a breast cancer survivor whose doctor was warning her, you need to get sleep at night. And then she was being called in and also given these shifts with not enough hours to get home, rest, and get back. We had a young man who developed an autoimmune disease while working in a restaurant. And it was, he wasn't able to sleep. He kept triggering his symptoms. There's some really important health issues here. This is not just a, hey, wouldn't it be nice to know about my social plans? This is really a huge worker health issue. So what we've addressed with it in the bill is a right to rest is what we call it. An employee may not be forced to work two shifts across two different days without at least 10 hours between the shifts. We left it so that they can do so voluntarily. We did find some number of employees that are just trying to get the hours as much as they can in the days they're available, and they want to volunteer for that sort of shift because it's what works for them. The main thing we wanted to do with this bill was make it so that employees still have the flexibility that they want, but there is a precedent set, a baseline that employers need to make sure that they're treating their employees well in terms of their schedules.
So do they get overtime or something if they do end up in a clopening shift, whether they volunteer for it?
So that would... if they volunteer for it, I don't think that there is an overtime. But the predictability pay is the piece to talk about with the changes in schedules that we're talking about here, which is that an employee who is willing to let their schedule be changed or forced either way, if they're forced to do something by their employer that doesn't give them this notice, they get a predictability pay of half of the hours not worked when employees were scheduled but then canceled. So if you lose shifts and that means you're not going to be able to pay your bills this month, you still get paid a piece of that. And that's, of course, going to keep the employer from probably wanting to cancel your shifts last minute. So hopefully that actually doesn't happen very often because they become more dependable. And then you get one additional hour of pay when hours are added by the employer without notice. So there are little pieces here that can come into play to help the worker get by better when they're being jerked around, frankly, and also to incentivize the employer not to make these last-minute changes and to build a schedule that works.
Hannah, any idea, because there's a lot of data to go through here, figuring out which industries and which businesses, any idea how many workers total might be affected in the state of Oregon?
I don't actually know the number, and I will get back to you, but I do know that when you think about the number of chains, you think about just the number of malls. I live in Portland, so I'm thinking about just in Portland alone, but also in Ashland. I'm sure if you stop and you think, how many times do you go by a coffee shop chain that has probably thousands of employees worldwide? This impacts a lot of workers, and like I said earlier on, retail and food service are the most rapidly growing fields in Oregon. So those numbers are only going to get bigger.
Did you have a second line of operation here that might have been a bit of a convincer for legislators? Did you really have a ballot measure ready to go in case?
Oh, we did. Yeah. So we reached a point while we were in the Senate where things were stalled, and it was because business lobbyists were pushing back pretty hard. And, you know, we knew that this bill was important for workers here in Oregon. And so when it started to seem like maybe the bill wouldn't be able to pass because, you know, our Senate was listening to these business lobbyists more than they were listening to the workers in front of them, and we wanted to make sure that they knew we meant business. So we pulled together a ballot measure, and we were ready to go to the people with this. We got the 1,000 signatures that you need to qualify. We got them in less than a week with all volunteer signature gatherers, and actually most of those volunteers were workers who'd been engaged in the campaign because this affected them directly. So we moved pretty quickly, and, you know, as soon as the word started moving through the Capitol building that this ballot measure was for real, suddenly our bill came up to a vote. So we're really grateful to the legislators who pushed for this, and also for the volunteers who really showed their power in the streets that, you know, we would have brought this to the people, because we think this issue really is important. And you know, after looking at the polling around it as well, people care about this. This is an issue that I think really could have passed at the ballot. And, you know, clearly the legislators knew that, too.
Well, because they passed it 23-6 in the Senate and 46-13 in the House. So that's a pretty clear margin. We have just a few seconds left. One of the references to this law was that it's going to lead to more automation. Are manufacturers affected at all by the Fair Work Week law?
Well, so Fair Work Week affects food service, hospitality, and retail. So manufacturing businesses are not directly affected. The automation they may have been talking about was scheduling softwares. I'm not sure. You know,
not directly on manufacturing per se. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure where that argument comes from, but manufacturing is not directly affected by this bill.
Okay, so the 1 week scheduling requirement comes up in a year, you say?
Mm-hmm. Okay. In June, I believe, of 2018.
Okay. Hannah Talba is the Oregon Office Manager for Working Families. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson
Exchange
to talk about Fair Work Week.